Radical love, lavish generosity, extravagant forgiveness, inclusive hospitality, compassionate action, selfless service, a passion for justice, creative nonviolence, simple living. Good day, good people. I'm Robert Farrell. This is Coalesce. Thank you for joining me. Coalesce is grounded in both and thinking, heart wisdom, and listening for the common good arising in dialogue, where we are present to presence. Coalesce provides an opportunity to encounter and discover the multiple perspectives that make our beautiful community. May we see with the eyes of our heart. May we love one another with peace and compassion. May all beings come to know the divine presence within. This is episode 3, Wisdom's Way of Knowing. At Contemplative Inner Being, one guiding question is, how can we turn information into transformation? How can we use the sacred text, tradition, and experience to lead people into new places with God, with life, and with themselves? The real work of transformation is God's to do and ours to accept. Tobin Hart, author of From Information to Transformation and a professor of psychology, maps 6 interrelated layers of knowing and learning. 1. Information. 2. Knowledge, where direct experience brings information to the level of mastery and skill. 3. Intelligence, integrating intuitive and analytical. 4. Understanding, seeing with the eye of the heart. 5. Wisdom, blending truth with an ethic of what is right. And finally, transformation. Transformation, he says, is about waking up, whereas the first 5 are more about growing up. Cynthia Bourgeau says that Jesus came to help people awaken, but awakening is not that easy. And as a master of wisdom, Jesus had mixed success. As the 4 Gospels all record, some people glimpsed what he was saying while others missed it altogether. Some people got it part of the time and missed it the rest. Some people woke up and others remained asleep. How does one awaken? How do we move through our lives taking in information and experiences toward greater aliveness and wholeness? How can we approach studying the wisdom lineage in such a way that we are roused from sleep and open to God's transformative grace? Let's explore wisdom ways of knowing that can support this journey. The first principle of spiritual teachers is rather constant. Only love can be entrusted with wisdom or with big truth. All other attitudes will murder and mangle and manipulate truth for their own ego purposes. Humans must first find the unified field of love and then start their thinking from that point. This is the challenging insight of mature religion. All prayer disciplines are somehow trying to get head and heart and body to work as one, and that's one's thinking rather entirely. All prayer disciplines are somehow trying to get head and heart and body to work as one, and that changes one's thinking rather entirely. The concentration of attention in the heart, this is the starting point of prayer, says one mystic. Any other handler of your experience, including the rational mind or even mere intellectual theology eventually distorts and destroys the beauty and healing power of the big truth. The second principle is that truth is on some level always beautiful and healing to those who honestly want truth. Big truth cannot be angry, antagonistic, or forced on anyone, or it will inherently distort the message, as the common belief in a punitive God has done for centuries. The good, the true, and the beautiful are always their own best argument for themselves, by themselves, and in themselves. Such beauty or inner coherence is a deep inner knowing that both evokes the soul and even pulls the soul into oneness. Incarnation is beauty, and beauty always needs to be incarnate. That is specific, concrete, particular. We need to experience very particular soul-evoking goodness in order to be shaken into what many call realization. It is often a momentary shock where you know you have been moved to a different plane of awareness. This is precisely how transformation differs from the mere acquiring of facts and information. Whereas information will often inflate the ego, transformation utterly humbles us. In that moment, we know how much we have not known up to now, and still surely do not know. This is a good and probably necessary starting place. Love is luring us forward because love is what we already are at our core, and we are naturally drawn to the fullness of our own being. Let me say that again. Love is luring us forward because love is what we already are at our core, and we are naturally drawn to the fullness of our own being. Like knows like, and when we are comfortable in our true identity, as Meister Eckhart says, quote, "It is God's pleasure and rapture to place his whole nature in this true place, because it is God's own identity too," end quote. As an electromagnetic force, infinite love is drawing the world into the one fullness of love. We will finally be unable to resist such overwhelming love. Some saints even said the devil would be unable to resist in the end. So don't fight it, resist it, or deny it now. Love will always win. Love is luring us forward because love is what we already are at our core, and we are naturally drawn to the fullness of our own being. Let us pause for 1 minute in silence to listen to that fullness of love. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in silence. Be still for 1 minute. Wisdom is not the result of mental effort. It is a way of being, a way of being whole and fully open to a knowing that is more than rational thought alone. Do not confuse this kind of knowing as lightweight, saccharine, or ephemeral. Wisdom teachers would say exactly the contrary is true. To see in such a way is the hard work of keeping all inner spaces open, heart, mind, and body all at once. This is at the center of any authentic spirituality and does not happen easily or without paying respectful and non-egoic attention, which I could call prayer. Contrary to the grace versus works righteousness split that became popular after the Reformation, it is a lot of work and practice to remain fully open to undeserved and unmerited grace. See Philippians 2:12-13. The dualistic mind is unable to resolve that paradox. As usual, it just takes one side of every argument. Cynthia Bourgeau writes, "The wisdom way of knowing requires the whole of one's being and is ultimately attained only through the wielding of one's whole being into the intimacy of knowing and being known. It doesn't happen apart from complete vulnerability and self-giving. But the divine lover is absolutely real, and for those willing to bear the wounds of intimacy, the knowledge of that underlying coherence in which all things hold together is both possible and inevitable." Since the Enlightenment era of the 17th century, we've become overly reliant on the mind to the neglect of heart and body. By heart, I don't just mean feeling and emotion. Tilden Edwards, founder of the Shalem Institute, describes the spiritual faculty of heart as a quality of intuitive awareness, a sense of inclusive, compassionate, undefended, direct in-touchness. This undefended knowing allows us to drop beneath the thinking mind to touch upon real experience, unhindered by ego's sense of self, without fear or agenda. So we're going to approach the wisdom lineage from a healthy middle, a place between two alternating mediocrities of knowing, all heart and little head, lacking rational, historical, scientific grounding, or all head and little heart, lacking in inner experience and true love. We need head and heart grounded in our physical and sensory body for a holistic and mature faith. Over-explanation separates us from astonishment. We need transformed people today, and not just people with answers. We all need what Jesus described as the beginner's mind of a curious child, a beginner's mind, or what some call constantly renewed immediacy, which is the best path for spiritual wisdom. Tobin Hart writes, "Instead of grasping for certainty, wisdom rides the question, lives the question. When the quest for certainty and control is pushed to the background, the possibility of wonder returns. Wonder provides a gateway to wise insight." Incorporating negative and self-critical thinking is essential to true prophetic understanding. At the same time, we must also trust that we are held irrevocably in the mystery of God's love without fully understanding it. Alongside all our knowing, accompanying every bit of our knowing, must be the humble knowing that we don't know. That's why the great tradition of prayer is balanced by both cataphatic knowing through images and words and apophatic knowing through silence, images, and beyond words. Apophatic knowing is the empty space around the words, allowing God to fill in all the gaps in an unspeakable way. Strangely enough, this unknowing is a new kind of understanding. We have a word for it, faith, a kind of knowing that this doesn't need to know and yet doesn't dismiss knowledge either. A kind of knowing that doesn't need to hold everything itself because at a deeper level, it knows it is being held. As Paul puts it, "For now we see in a mirror dimly, but then we will see face to face. Now I know only in part, then I will know fully, even as I have been fully known." 1 Corinthians 13:12. Friends, love is luring us forward because love is what we already are at our core, and we are naturally drawn to the fullness of our own being. Let us pause for 1 minute in silence to listen to that fullness of love. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in silence. Be still for 1 minute. Words are metaphors approximating the hard knock of reality itself. That doesn't mean we throw out words and ideas. Quite the contrary. The best Jewish approach to scripture study was called Midrash. They struggled with the text, unraveled it, looked at its various possible meanings, and offered a number of interpretations that often balanced and complemented one another. There was never just one meaning or one certain meaning that eliminated all others. If only Christianity had imitated our Jewish forebears in this regard, our history would have been so much more peaceful and life-giving. After the Enlightenment in the 17th century, we regressed in many ways as religion wanted to compete with the rational, intellectual, intelligent thinkers of Europe. The later Protestant Reformation moved forward with this mind as individuals and groups claimed there was only one correct interpretation of every scripture. Catholics looked to the Pope for that one correct interpretation. It's no surprise there are 35,000 Protestant denominations today, and Catholicism became so monarchical. We will never agree on the meaning of words. That's why the Word became flesh, to reveal that words can't get you there. Only experience, love, and relationship can. Jesus' truth claim was His person, His presence, and His ability to participate in God's perfect love. See John 14:6. John 6:35 and John 17:21 through 22. Emphasizing perfect agreement on words and forms instead of inviting people into an experience of the formless presence has caused much of the violence of human history. Jesus gives us His risen presence as the way, the truth, and the life, John 14:6. No dogma will ever substitute for that. Most of Jesus' teaching is walking with people on the streets, out in the desert, and often into nature. His examples come from the things he sees around him: birds, flowers, landlords and tenants, little children, women baking and sweeping, farmers farming. Jesus teaches with anecdote, parable, and concrete example much more than creating a systematic theology. Particulars seem to open us up to universals, to thisness. Thisness is the actual spiritual doorway to the everywhere and the always, much more than concepts. Incarnation is always specific and concrete, here and now, like this bread and this wine and this ordinary moment, or this half-crazy person right in front of me. We live in a time that can make use of the unique contribution of every era to enjoy intuitive and body knowledge, along with rational critique and deeper synthesis, thus encouraging both intelligent and heartfelt participation with our whole heart, soul, mind, and strength, as Jesus puts it, Mark 12:30. I do not believe the will of God is a theory, an argued moral theology, or an abstraction in any form. It is seeking the truth of each situation in that situation as best as we can figure it out. Somehow, the true self in all humans has natural access to that hidden will of God, if the mind and heart and body are open and undefended, which is always the spiritual task and not easily achieved. Jeremiah called it the law written on your heart, Jeremiah 31:33. Moses called it poetically, this law is not beyond your strength or beyond your reach. It is not in heaven, so that you need to wonder, who will go up to heaven and bring it down to us so that we may hear it and keep it? Nor is it beyond the seas, so that you wonder, who will cross the seas for us so that we might hear it and keep it? No, the word is very near you. It is your mouth and in your heart. Jews call this word the law. Christians call it the logos or the blueprint. Taoists call it the eternal Tao. Buddhists call it emptiness or the great compassion. Hindus call it Brahman. Sufis call it the dance. And science speaks of universal theories, but we are all pointing to one underlying and universal truth that we all strive for in 10,000 ways. Love is luring us forward because love is what we already are at our core, and we are naturally drawn to the fullness of our own being. Let us pause for 1 minute in silence to listen to that fullness of love. With eyes closed and hands on heart, rest in silence, be still for 1 minute. This week's practice is a basic breath practice. It's a way to help us awaken to that wisdom within. So sit quietly with an erect spine and just breathe naturally. Bring attention to the present moment and breathe, silently counting the breath. Begin counting your breath, counting the first inhalation as 1, the exhalation as 2, and so on. Once you reach 10, start over. Between the in and out breath, rest the mind. Pay special attention to the stillness between each breath. Whenever your mind wanders, go back to 1 and continue to count the breaths. Set an engaging, gently challenging standard. It's your choice. You can go back to 1 only when you lose count. If you find you are adept at multitasking, that is, able to count while daydreaming, you may want to set a sterner standard. Go back to 1 whenever thoughts take over the foreground of your attention and the breath. Count and present moment become background. You can return to 1 whenever any thought arises, even if it hasn't distracted you from the counting. A simple summary: follow the breath with the mind, counting each breath, resting the mind between the in and out breaths, and return to 1 if your mind wanders. Thank you for joining me.